ABC Radio National, the Australian Broadcasting Corporation's network of ideas, broadcast and podcast worldwide. Hello, I'm Andrew Ford, and coming up is an interview from The Music Show on Radio National. Some of the music you'll hear in the interview has been shortened to meet copyright restrictions. But if you visit our website at abc.net.au/rn/musicshow, you can listen to the whole programme as audio on demand. You can check the playlists, read transcripts of past interviews, and send us an email.
Said I'd like to love you like you like it. Your heart's desire, love you so right, dear. You never tire.
That's a song called One Time, and that's the voice of Smokey Robinson. It comes from his latest album, Time Flies When You're Having Fun. And Smokey Robinson is my very welcome guest on today's music show. Welcome to the show, Smokey.
Thank you, Andrew. It's good to be here.
And are you having fun?
I'm having a great time. Absolutely.
Have you found that time has flown?
Time has absolutely flown. Now, I'm telling you, it's gone by instantly, overnight. It's amazing. I look back, and last year we started to celebrate the 50th anniversary of Motown, and I can't believe that 50 years have gone by, because it just whizzed.
Yes, yes. I must say, when I started to do some research for this, I was surprised that you are as young a man as you are, but you started really early, didn't you?
I started early, and I was fortunate. I was blessed because I got a chance to start my life off at an early age as a teenager, really. And, you know, most people don't get a chance to do that, to get a chance to pursue or be involved in the career that they were pursuing at that early age. And, yeah, I was very young.
And you're still writing songs as avidly as ever? I mean, these are mostly Smokey Robinson compositions on this new album.
I write all the time, Andrew. It's really something that it's a natural occurrence for me, and I just write all the time. And so, yeah, I'm still writing.
The writing, well, it's interesting to me what when you started, actually. Do you remember writing your first song?
Yeah, I do. I was 6 years old, and I remember that because I was in a play. I was in elementary school, and I was in a play, and we had a class called auditorium in which we did plays, and I was in the junior glee club and like that. And I was in this play, and my auditorium teacher had written this little melody on the piano that she played at the beginning of the play and at the end of the play, and I asked her if I could write some words for it. And she allowed me to do that. And on the night of the play, my mom was in the audience, and you would have thought that I was George Gershwin or somebody like that, because my mom was just ranting and raving. She would call people she didn't even know and told them about it. Got the phone book, just start calling people. My son did, you know. I had to sing it on the phone to people. It was amazing.
I think perhaps before we go any further, because you know, I don't know whether you know that this has been the album of the week on Radio National, the new one, this new one, Time Flies When You're Having Fun.
I heard it, and I'm so happy about that.
So our listeners will be familiar with the new album, but what they might not have heard this week is something vintage. So let us pause and be suitably reverential in the company of the tracks of my tears.
All righty.
Smokey Robinson and the Miracles and the Tracks of My Tears. And my guest on today's music show is Smokey Robinson. That's a song which I never tire of hearing, I must say. And one of the things that amazed me about the new album is that your voice is almost the same.
Well, thank you very much. I was kind of retro tripping when I was listening to that song. That really brought back some memories for me. But I think about the voice thing though. But gosh, time has flown by because that was a long time ago. But I sing that song every night in my live concerts, and every night is new to me. It's always new. I have a bunch of songs that I sing every night, and they're always new. I have a great time doing the concerts. It's like, as far as my work goes, it's probably my favorite thing to do the concerts and to be with the fans and to one-on-one with them and have a good time. And I was listening to that song and I was thinking, gosh, I sing that song every night and it's still new.
That's very surprising. I mean, I find that song stays very fresh, and a lot of songs from the era don't particularly. But that one certainly does.
Well, thank
you. The fact that it stays fresh for you is remarkable.
Yeah, it does.
It's... well, let's before we leave that song, I mean, one of the things that strikes me, and you mentioned the fact that your mother thought you might be a reincarnation of Gershwin.
Yeah.
And I know your sister was a big fan of Sarah Vaughan when you were growing
up. Exactly.
So you must have listened to a lot of the Gershwins and Cole Porter and those sorts of songs. And there's a certain almost literary quality to Outside I'm Masquerading, Inside My Hope is Fading, My Smile is My Makeup I Wear Since My Breakup with You. That's most of the songs that were being written around the time you wrote that song didn't have lyrics as sophisticated as that. Do you think you were influenced to some extent by the great American songbook, the Broadway composers?
Well, probably. You know, I had a great dose of music growing up, and so I probably was. And those are great writers, you know. The music that I heard when you mentioned Sarah Vaughan is the first voice I ever remember hearing, and I heard people like Sarah Vaughan and Ella Fitzgerald and Frank Sinatra and Nat King Cole and people like that being played in our house all the time, and Count Basie, Duke Ellington. This is the music that I grew up on, and those writers were those songs were written when the song was king. And what I mean by that is that in those days when those songs were written, long before I was born, most of them, when somebody wrote a hit song, all the artists of that day recorded that song. Unlike today where the focal point is on the artist, in those days the focal point was on the song. Mm. And so all the artists of that day recorded that song. And so that was a different era. And those writers had to be on target with their songs in order to get one of their songs across. So I believe I was greatly influenced by those people.
You were, and you think of yourself primarily as a songwriter or as a singer, or do you not make the, you don't have to make the distinction, of course, but do you not make the distinction?
I really don't. I just it's all a part of who I am and what I do. So I enjoy every part of my life, my musical life. So I don't know how to describe myself. I've never really tried to, actually.
Because you've been obviously a producer as well, yeah. and a company executive.
Yeah.
So I mean, you've touched just about every bit of the business.
Yeah, I have, and it's all been a wonderful journey. I'm telling you, because see, the reason I got into the business side of it was because I was there on the very first day when Berry Gordy started Motown, and there were only five people there. So we all had to do everything, you know, and box the records up, go get them, take them to the radio stations, all that, you know. So I was involved in that long before I became a vice president. And it was just a natural occurrence for me when I did become vice president to be involved in the music, in the business part of it.
What did you think? What did you all think you were doing on that first day of Motown? Did you have, I mean, I'm sure nobody expected it would last 50 years, but did you... It was an optimistic time for Detroit, wasn't it? People had jobs, people had cars.
Yeah, it was. But on the first day of Motown, Berry sat us down, the other four of us who were there with him, and he said, "We are not going to just make black music. We're going to make music for everybody. We're going to make music for the world, and we're going to make music with great beats and great stories, and we're always going to make quality music." And that was our goal. That's what we set out to do. And gosh, thank God we accomplished that, evidently, because the music seems to be more popular now than it ever was.
Yes, yes. Yeah. Although it had a very distinctive sound, it was a sound which could influence other people as well and affect the way they were making music. I mean, I suppose I'm thinking now of the Beatles, who the first song they recorded for their second album was a Smokey Robinson song.
I love them for that.
I bet you do.
Absolutely. Yeah.
It's a song, and I've been listening to your original version of You Really Got a Hold on Me, and maybe there's a slight influence even of your voice on John Lennon's.
Oh, okay.
I mean, he sings it very like you.
Okay. Well, You Really Got a Hold on Me was a song that I wrote. That song, I was inspired by a song by Sam Cooke. When I wrote that song, and Sam Cooke had a record out, a song called "Bring It On Home to Me," and it was like that bluesy kind of slow gut bucket kind of thing, and I wanted to write something like that, and it turns out that it was "You Really Got a Hold on Me," so that's what that song, the inspiration for that song was "Bring It On Home to Me" by Sam Cooke.
Well, I know that song very well, and I never noticed the connection. So you came up with something distinctive, given that you started off being influenced.
All right.
Let's listen to the Beatles. This is from With the Beatles. Well, I wish we could listen to the Beatles, but this being a podcast, I'm afraid we're not allowed to. So you will have to go and check out the sound of John Lennon with George Harrison singing You Really Got a Hold on Me for yourselves. There's the Beatles from With the Beatles and a Smokey Robinson song, You Really Got a Hold on Me. Smokey Robinson is my guest on today's music show on ABC Radio National. It sounds good, doesn't it?
It really does. You know, I've been to England so many times, but the last time I was just there a couple months ago, and that was the first time I ever got a chance to go to Abbey Road Studios. And it's such a historical place, and just to go there and see where they recorded all those songs, it was really great. I imagine it would be akin to someone going to Detroit now to go to the Hitchfield Studio because it's a museum now. But and the wall outside the Abbey Road studio, people are still, you know, putting their names and the phone numbers and addresses and messages to the Beatles and all that on there. It's an amazing place.
and great to hear it in glorious mono as well.
Absolutely.
I know that around this time, Phil Spector was very, very insistent that mono was the thing. Did you have strong views about that as well? And the Beatles also rather resisted stereo.
I don't think I had a strong view about that. I know that when we first started Motown, we only had like one track. So everybody who was going to be on that record better be in that studio at that time because there was no going back and overdubbing and all that, you know. And when we got two tracks where the lead vocal could be on a track by itself, you know, that we just thought we were the most innovative record company in the world at that point. So we were just striving and going along with whatever the new innovative things were. And I think that when stereo came in, we were very happy that we had it. And it gave such a broader sound, although mono still holds its own.
Yes. Yeah. Well, we're on AM radio, so everything's mono here.
Yeah, you know, and it still holds its own. It stands up. And another thing I want to mention, too, is that vinyl's back.
Mm.
You know, they had eliminated vinyl from the record world, and vinyl is back now. In fact, Time Flies When You're Having Fun is also on vinyl.
Oh, is it?
Yes, it is.
And I bet it costs twice as much as the CD, does it?
But, you know, it was a joy then. You know, you had a big record jacket and you with liner notes and blah, 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 and all that, you know, and
absolutely.
It's not quite the same anymore.
They've never quite solved that, have they? That was a
right.
big loss, losing the record jacket.
It sure was.
When you started out with the Miracles, what did you call your music? Did you know what you were singing? And was it R&B? I mean, was it soul?
Well, you know something, Andrew? Back in those days, music had labels. And that always bothered me because music had labels. And you could take the very same song and a black artist would make it. It would be considered rhythm and blues or R&B or soul music or what have you. And then a white artist would record that exact same song, and it was called pop. So that always bothered me, and especially when you say, well, black people had it, it was soul music. Everybody has a soul, you know? We all are equipped with souls. And there, you know, were white artists recording at the time, and they had souls also. So I didn't get that part of it either. And I never got the labeling of music. So I was always quietly in protest of that.
So you avoided the labels.
Absolutely.
You dodged them.
Yes.
And you were a very organized outfit, it seems to me, reading about you. I mean, very professional, you and the Miracles, almost like a... did you see yourselves as a role model, maybe, to some of the other groups in Motown?
Well, yeah, we did, because we were the first group that Barry had before he started Motown. And we did consider ourselves as role models, and we had to try to influence them in a positive way, all the groups that were coming after us and all the people who came there after us. So we did try to keep ourselves on a very positive imagery, and we took care of our business, and each of us had jobs within the group, and we tried to handle ourselves as businesslike as possible.
Mm.
Yeah.
And it worked for you, obviously.
Yeah, it did. It worked for us. It absolutely did. And I think we did have a positive influence on the people who came after us there.
And writing songs for other people. I mean, obviously the Beatles took that song of yours and made it their own, and as the Rolling Stones would later with Going to a Go-Go. But with a song like My Guy, which I think you wrote for Mary Wells,
mm-hmm.
was that different? Did it feel different? Did you approach the job differently because you were writing for another voice?
Yeah, I always did. And I knew those people so well. We all grew up there together, you know, and we were all brothers and sisters. And not only musically, we were socially brothers and sisters because we hung out together. We did things outside of music together. We had picnics and family outings and parties, and we went to each other's homes and ate, and, you know, it was like that for us. So I knew those people so well. So, yeah, I would tailor my songs to whoever I was writing for at the time. And so much to the point whereas I knew words that they said well. And I really mean this. I knew words that they said well. So if I had a different wording for an idea and I was going to, I would not say that the same way if I was recording that same idea, those same words for Marvin Gaye as I would for Mary Wells. I would say it differently because I knew she said some words better than she said others. And so I would tailor the song for her so it could be like her song.
Right.
Yeah.
So in a sense, now when somebody else sings that song, they're not just singing your song. They're singing a bit of Mary Wells.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's almost like there's a little bit of her DNA in that mm-hmm. song.
I tried that, sure. Yeah.
We must talk about... Tears of the Clown, which is Tears of a Clown is a remarkable song for many reasons, but not least because you were finished with the Miracles around about this time. You were winding mm-hmm. down, weren't
yeah.
you? And then suddenly you go and have, well, I guess, your biggest hit, was it?
Yeah, number one record in the world for us. I mean, it was incredible. And Tears of a Clown had been recorded 3 years before it ever came out. A young lady who worked for Motown in England heard that song on that. She was just at work one day playing that album and heard that song. It came up. And she said, wow. And she convinced the powers that be in the UK to release it there. It became number one. It was the first number one record that Motown ever had in the UK. And so, of course, that inspired us to release it around the world. And it was the biggest record that we, the Miracles and I, ever had. But Tears of a Clown was inspired by Stevie Wonder, because Stevie Wonder had already recorded that track, that very same track that's on that record. He had already recorded that. And he brought it to me at a Christmas party, and he said, hey, man, he said, I got this great track, and I can't think of a song to go with this, so I want you to listen to this, see what you can come up with. So Stevie's my brother. We're very close. So I said, okay, man. And so I took it home, and I was listening to it, and bump, 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 ba-da-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun. It's Barnum and Bailey.
Mm.
It's Ringling Brothers, you know.
Yes, yes. It's so, one of those big steam organs,
exactly.
Isn't it?
Exactly. So I wanted to write about the circus, but I didn't want to write about animals. So I thought about the old tale of Pagliacci, the Italian clown who made everybody happy. All the people came to the circus not to see the animals, but to see him mainly. And he made all these people in the audience happy, and they all loved him so much. And then he went back to his dressing room, and he cried because he didn't have a woman's love. He didn't have that kind of love. So Tears of a Clown is a personalized spin on Pagliacci's life.
So Stevie Wonder gave you that riff,
the
hook.
The whole track, it was recorded.
All of the music was there.
All of the music was there.
Right.
Yeah.
But none of the words.
None of the words.
And did you find that a challenge, fitting the words to the existing music?
Oh, no, because I do that all. I still do that. You know, I'll get a great track from somebody, and there's a track on the new album. Yeah, on the new album, yeah. A couple of tracks, in fact, on the new album that I got from people I worked with on them. My nephew is one of them. There's a song on there called What You Gonna Do? And so my nephew and some of his little cohorts gave me that track, you know, and I wrote that song to that track. And then there's another song on there called Satisfy You. And one of my co-producers and my sound engineer, Gary Gold, brought me that track and said, hey, man, see what you can come up with. So I've done that all my life.
Is it like a discipline, having to find the words to fit up the pattern that you've been given?
I don't know, Andrew, that I would call it a discipline, because I've been doing it all my life. Many of the songs that you played, the tracks of My Tears. The tracks of My Tears, I attribute that to my guitarist, Marv Tarplin, who just retired last December. And he was with me forever, through the Miracles and my solo career, everything. But the tracks of My Tears was a guitar riff. That guitar riff that's on there, he gave it to me. And I just listened to it until I can come up with an idea for it. The first idea that I had for the tracks of My Tears was, I got the chorus part first. Take a good look at my face, see my smile looks out of place. If you look close, it's easy to trace that I miss you so much. No, that's not it. that you're gone away and I'm crying. No, that's not it. And one day I was in my car, and I was thinking, what if a person had cried so much that if you got close and looked at their face, you could see tracks that their tears had made? And I said, that's it. Tracks of My Tears. So I was inspired by his guitar riff. And on many songs, Cruising, Going to a Go-Go, Ain't That Peculiar, I attributed all those songs to Marv Tarplin because those were his guitar riffs.
Well, we'll hear the most famous riff of them all now, complete with a bassoon, which is a very, very rare instrument in
exactly.
pop music, especially at this,
thank you,
this era.
Yeah.
And thank you, Smokey Robinson, for being my guest on today's
thank
music
you, Andrew.
Show.
It's been a ball.
Subject.
That was an interview from The Music Show with me, Andrew Ford. It was broadcast on ABC Radio National, the Australian Broadcasting Corporation's network of ideas, broadcast and podcast worldwide. We cover science, history, religion, the arts, social and current affairs in more than 60 programs. And you can find out more at abc.net.au/rn.